All right, we're live. Today we have Logan Fowler, my man.
Yes, sir. What's going on?
What's up, brother?
Not much.
So, I'm going to start. I did not plan this or anything, but I have three questions for you to start.
That sounds amazing. Let's do it.
All right. The first one's a yes or no question. The second two are open-ended.
Perfect.
All right. The first question. Are you familiar with Tiki Tango?
Yes.
Nice. Second question. Have you heard that it's closing tonight, and how do you feel about it?
You know, Dolly, I have heard that it is closing tonight, and I just got to say, praise be to the Most High. That place is a walking cesspool, and I am so glad that you do not have to go there anymore. I appreciate your service being out there. It's time for that thing to go.
It was great. No. I don't know about that.
No, it was a great time. It was awesome. Back. Yeah. It was the best. Great.
Are you going to be there tonight?
Hey, man, if you're there, I'm there.
Let's ride.
Well, hey, one last time for the boys.
one last banger. Gotta freaking do it.
Come on. Our life's a movie.
Dude, I've had so many times in Tiki, and the fact that it's going to be apartments now, I'm like...
Is that what it'll be?
Yeah. It was bought by a developer, and it's going to be turned into, like, high-rise apartments with businesses at the bottom.
Actually, I don't really like that.
No.
I don't think I'd ever want to live there.
No. No.
I think guys like us should go there and occupy Tiki Tango. Yes. I'll sit down right on the front steps, make sure it stays here just for you.
Yes, let's do it. Let's just go protest tonight.
I'm all in for it.
Or tomorrow
dude.
Morning, maybe.
I love good free speech, free petition. Yeah. Come on.
That's one thing I could get behind protest, honestly.
Honestly, same here.
Yeah.
Never been a protesting guy, but for Tiki, I'd do it. For Tiki, I really would, man.
Heck yeah. That's freaking great. So let's move into first your story a little bit.
Okay.
What you got going on. A bunch of cool things. You do a bunch of sports, skateboarding. Bunch of freaking stuff. It's awesome. So let's start at the skateboarding.
Okay.
Skateboarding route.
You just kind of.
How did you get into it first? Like, how long have you been skating?
So I always tell people I've been skating just about 2 years because that's pretty much the time that I've been into it as of recent. But I did start skateboarding when I was really young. Okay. So I got my first skateboard probably when I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
So I pretty much just went through that phase every kid went through, you know, Tony Hawk Underground 2 comes out.
Yeah.
I just want to be cool. So I buy a skateboard. I am just god awful at it. But I got my first skateboard right around the time that my parents got divorced. So we, you know, once my parents got divorced, my mom made it a point for me to just start hanging out with more kids. You know, it makes it seem a little bit better if I'm like out around different families, around different people, right?
Yeah.
And so I met one of these kids in my neighborhood that skateboarded a little bit. So she wanted me to hang out with him, so she got me one. And then I got hooked on it for like 3 years. Loved it. So from 8 to 11, skateboarded a lot. Definitely made up for, you know, maybe my father and my mother not always being on the best of terms. I could literally be at the skate park having a good time. Everything was peachy.
Yeah.
And then I put it down for a few years because I wanted to pursue high school sports. I really thought I had a career in tennis. Thought I was going to pay for college. Didn't pay a dime. We're in the hole $20,000 for tennis. Mom, if you're listening to this, I am so sorry. That's my fault. But did that. Obviously, just bombed it. You know, I'm washed up. My one of my friends told me the other day I'm a washed up high school athlete. So I think it's pretty true. And anyways, I ended up moving to Atlanta a couple years ago, about 3 years ago now, and got back into it because I was going through some pretty difficult circumstances. I got my first job out of college, wasn't paying much, got fired from that job, picked up another job, wasn't great, and didn't have a whole lot of friends. And so I was like, you know what, I really enjoyed skateboarding as a kid. Let me get back into it, see what it's about. And honestly, just been kind of addicted ever since. It's been incredible.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's freaking awesome. I know. So now you skate now with a little, I think more of a little bit of a purpose behind it as well.
Definitely, man. It's definitely a lot different of a purpose. I honestly think that the purposes behind me skateboarding is the same purpose in a weird way that I'd skateboarded when I was a kid. So I think right now, you can see a lot of kids that are around my age at the skate park, anywhere from like, you know, the youngest we have 6 years old, oldest we have my age, but the range that we're looking at is like 8 to 14, 8 to 16, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of these kids are getting into skateboarding for the same reasons that I got into skateboarding. Tough home life. You know, they're going through some stuff. Maybe they're not from the best background and they want to get out and kind of escape a little bit. So I know that my role is like being in that place where I was just looking for like older dudes to kind of like love on me and be in a position to maybe teach me a little bit about skateboarding, teach me a little bit about life. You can kind of be like a substitute dad in some ways by going out there. So it's been cool to like make relationships with a lot of those kids, a lot of the guys my age too. And it's just been really, honestly, just such a blessing.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
That's so really cool. I feel like that gives a ton. Like it helps them a lot, but I feel like being in that mentor position as well, like helps you grow.
Oh yeah, dude.
Well, like it's one of those, like the teacher learns as much as the,
oh, for sure. Yeah. It's I learned something new every day. Like, I didn't realize I was so stone age when it came to, like, meme culture and stuff like that. And, you know, they call me names. They make fun of me all the time. And it's whatever. I don't care. But it really has been such a cool learning experience just to, like, kind of know how to respond to difficult situations, kind of hear about what's going on at home for some of these kids. And, you know, I feel like we're all put on this earth here, like, especially by the Lord, just, like, love people well. Make sure that we're using the things that we're good at, the skills that we have to, you know, make somebody's life a little bit more peaceful, share a little bit of love. And so that's basically been my whole mission being out there at Brook Run every day, is just like, how can I make sure that, like, if they're at the skate park, they feel like they're at a safe place. How can I like love them other than they're valuable beyond skating, beyond what their home life looks like? So it's been cool.
That's freaking awesome, dude.
Yeah, man.
That's cool. Backtrack a little. Where are you from originally? You said you moved to Atlanta 3 years ago.
Yeah, dude.
I never knew. I thought you were born and raised here.
Nah, man. I've never been in a city. Literally, where I grew up, we didn't have a Chick-fil-A. I grew up in Effingham County, Georgia. So it's about 45 minutes.
Say that again.
Effingham.
Nice.
Go ahead, dude. Crack a joke, brother.
I like it.
I've never heard one before, man. You've got it.
I know you haven't. I love
it. It's incredible, man. We lived about 45 minutes north of Savannah.
Okay.
And it literally, as soon as you follow Highway 21 out of Savannah, 45 minutes down the road, if you feel like you've lost service and you've stopped seeing businesses and every house looks like it has a potential to be a drug house, you've made it to my homeland. So it's a different world. It was the countryest place that I could possibly be from, which is, you know, why I'm just the countryest guy, you know, dude.
You are.
I am.
I've seen you at PBR.
I have never been there.
Never.
I've never been to PBR ever. Not once.
Not a single time. Not this week, at least.
Yeah. Definitely not yesterday. Yeah, for sure.
That's great. So, from the sticks.
From the sticks.
We'll call it.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting. I'm kind of the boonies. Far boonies, but still out.
What boonies are you from again?
Blythewood, South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 30 minutes outside Columbia.
Dolly, I look at you, I see a mirror.
Yeah.
I see myself.
Yeah.
I don't
know if that's good.
I like it, personally. I like it. Yeah, Blakely, South Carolina?
No, Blythewood.
Blakewood.
Blythewood. Blythewood.
Wow, maybe you are a little bit more from the sticks than I am.
A little bit. No, yeah. It would be, what's a small suburb? Dallas.
Oh, Georgia. Alpharetta.
Like a Dallas.
Oh, Dallas.
Like really small. I mean, it's like population 3,000 or 4,000 probably.
That's so good.
Like it's really small, but it's 20 or 30 minutes from a million population city. So it's not far. It's just a little tiny town though.
Oh, we love that.
Yeah.
So you guys didn't really have like a ton of restaurants. For example, we had right when I got to UGA. So I went to Georgia Southern first and went to UGA.
Yep.
So I'd come home when I was at Georgia Southern because it was so close. Statesboro was about an hour away. We opened up a Popeyes down the street from my house. We had to hire, the town had to hire a police escort and shut down lanes on Highway 21 so that the Popeyes line could get through. And I'm not even kidding you, dude. It was probably 3/4 of a mile long for the first week Popeyes was open.
Dang.
It was awesome.
That's crazy. Yeah, we had Bojangles was the big one.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was like Wendy's, McDonald's, of course. And then I went back and, dude, there's a Starbucks now. There's a Zaxby's. There's like all kind of stuff. Like every time I go back, I'm just like, what is happening here?
Dude, Starbucks, that's the sign.
That's when you know you're growing. Yeah, that's when you know you're growing.
That's when the pants get tighter.
Yeah.
More entrepreneurs move in.
Yeah.
It's bustling out there now.
They even, there was actually even a new hotel. I was like,
a hotel?
It was a Hilton hotel. I was like, who in their right mind would travel to Blythewood, South Carolina and stay in a hotel? Like, why would we even need that?
You know what? Honestly, I kind of want to go to Blythewood and stay in that hotel. Jiho's like Jiho's a guest on your podcast a few weeks ago. He's a Hilton Honors member. Maybe we could get like a VIP suite and just live it up over there.
We should do it. I'm sure they have like rooftop pools and all kind of flashy stuff there.
Bars.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on, man. And we'll take a drink.
Oh, we will take a drink. We'll definitely
I'm down
do
for Blythewood, man. You tell me when you want to go, I'm there.
We need to go up there. I know that we're going hop on, really random, but come to the Carolina game, Carolina, Georgia, in Carolina.
Oh, there we go. Are you close? Is the Blythewood close to that?
Yeah, it's probably 30 minutes from the stadium.
I'm there.
Yeah.
Come on.
Let's do it.
I want to see Sandstorm.
We'll go fishing.
Y'all do Sandstorm, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I want to be in part of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. You have to be a Gamecock fan, though. If you
can. Hey, I'll do that for about 30 minutes.
I'll switch I'll do that until Georgia's kicking the crap out of them.
Yeah,
then,
exactly.
And then I'm a Georgia fan.
Then you're a Georgia fan, too. Yeah, we'll be on each other's pace there.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That was brutal. I went last year to that game.
Oh, geez.
Carolina game.
Yeah.
I have never been so humiliated in my life.
Oh, that's brutal.
I couldn't even walk through that freaking stadium. Like, everybody was just barking at me and screaming, and I was like, I hate this place.
Dude, I remember when y'all came to Georgia a few years ago. I can't remember if it was 2019 or 2020.
2019.
And beat us. And honestly, I didn't want to do anything for the next 3 weeks. It was embarrassing.
That was a good day.
Yeah.
That was a good day.
I, like, literally everybody I met that was a Gamecocks fan treated me horribly.
Oh, exactly. That's the thing is, it's like, I can't get too mad because I'm like, our fans are as bad, if not worse.
Oh, they're brutal, I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah,
terrible. You guys scare me a little bit.
Yeah, we're horrible. Annoying, obnoxious, drunk.
Like, yeah. It is great, man. I love SEC football. It's the best football there is.
Same. ACC's for the birds.
Come on, man. We don't like birds. I don't even flip birds.
Yeah, I'll flip a bird.
Amen, brother.
Heck yeah. Anyway, back on topic. Back on topic. So, skateboarding.
Yeah, man.
So you said you had, I guess your parents got divorced at a young age. What was that like going through?
You know, that was actually really difficult, man. I'm very blessed right now to have an incredible relationship with my father. There is a couple of years where we barely spoke, not to due to any hostility or anything, but it was just due to like growing apart. He's figuring himself out. I'm becoming a man. But I had to kind of be the man of the house in a lot of ways. So I've got, you know, a 5'2" mother. She's about 100 pounds soaking wet and knows how to put the fire of the Lord in you, dude. She is, she's a hot tamale for sure. And so, obviously being a lot bigger than her, having her go through divorce, like I think a lot of times we think about the divorce impact on children, but obviously it was really difficult on my mom too.
Yeah.
And so I kind of had to figure out what it meant to like be a man on my own. And I know a lot of people have this like similar experience. You know, we were talking about the statistics of what, you know, fatherlessness looks like earlier, but,
that's crazy and
absurd.
Go ahead and say those. Cause I didn't know until we just did. I mean, if you still have that pulled up, dude,
yeah, absolutely. It's, the statistics, statistics are actually alarming. I'm great with words, So an estimated, this is all from, you know, a reliable source. It's on Google, so it's got to be reliable.
Google's been screwing me lately, so I'm not.
Shout out, man.
That's crazy.
We're going back to Ask Jeeves.
Yeah, what's that new? There's a new one now.
Oh, DuckDuckGo or something
duck,
like
duck,
that.
Go, dude.
Yeah,
dude. Everybody go to DuckDuckGo. Screw Google.
Yeah, DuckDuckGo.com, I assume.
Maybe.
But anyways, this is from Google, so it's got to be somewhat reliable.
Yeah.
And I'm just playing it. It's actually is from correct. Like a reliable source. It's the National Center for Fathering. So it's estimated that anywhere from 19.5 to 24.7 million children in the U.S. are actually living in a house without a father. And then that just includes ones that are not physically present. Like you can think of the ones, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that might be listening to this or people that we know that experienced not having a father from an emotional standpoint. Somebody that's always working, somebody that's always gone. So these numbers are literally just exist for the ones that aren't physically in the household.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, you know, and I think we looked it up earlier, there's about 73 million what we'd call children in the U.S. So kids, you know, newborn to 18 years old.
Yeah, so that's 0 to 18. So we're at, what a...
Yeah, it says more than a fourth of kids in the U.S. are growing up in a household without a father.
That's insane.
And then what's even crazier about that is out of students in grades 1 through 12, so like what we'd say is like primary schooling, you know, potentially one of the most formative parts of your life.
Yeah.
39%. Or of those kids or of that statistic, 39% are living in a household without a father right now. So almost half of kids in school right now are doing that, which is crazy.
That's so like nuts to me.
Yeah.
I would like to see that, like this as a data person, I love spinning data a million different ways.
Uh-huh.
I would like to see that correlated with financial, I guess, like, economic, what's the word?
I guess, like, socioeconomic.
Socioeconomic.
Yeah.
Like, their status on that. Like, I wonder, sure. I'm sure there's, like, a huge correlation between, like, a very low socioeconomic level is very correlated with not having a father.
For sure. I would love to see what it looks like, you know, if you took different income, like, ranges of incomes. Yep. And then see what the statistic looks like according to that. Because I honestly believe that fatherlessness is a generational thing. There's never been a Fowler in that, like, in the nuclear household, as far as we can trace back at generations, it has been there longer than 8 years.
That's interesting.
So, my dad lasted the longest. And I love my dad. I think he's phenomenal. I just want to, you know, put that out there. But the 8 years is the longest a Fowler stayed in the household.
That's interesting. So there is actually, like, a ton of research on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you can look at family trees and basically you can predict divorce based off, like, a family's history of either divorce or staying married.
Yeah.
Like, we studied that in the course was, like, psychology of marriage.
Yeah.
And that was one of the best classes I ever took. It was so awesome. But it looked into things like this where it's, like, you would, like, map out your family tree.
Uh-huh.
And, like, you would see, like, okay, like, there's a ton of divorces on, say, your mom's side.
Right.
But there's none on your father's side.
Right.
Well, you're probably like 50-50 chance then.
Yeah.
But if both sides have like a history of divorce, your odds on divorce are like 99%.
They gotta be skyrocketing.
But like it's super high.
Yeah.
And like it correlates like crazy.
I believe that.
I don't know exactly why.
Uh-huh.
I guess it's like because they're similar people maybe and they have similar tendencies or something.
Yeah. Well, think about this, man. Like, if you're dating a girl, right, and then y'all break up
once. I don't know
once.
What that's like, but yeah.
Oh! Yikes. So anyways, when you're dating a girl,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what this is you speak of, but.
And you break up once. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be an option for you guys to break up again. And then when you see your parents married, they get divorced. And then your life continues after that. Divorce is always an option. And I think it's really cool when you see these families that, like, love each other really well. And, you know, honestly, it's like you see it a lot with, like, really strong Christian households, too, but not all of them because, you know, divorce doesn't just stop at the buck for anybody. Yeah.
That's an interesting.
For
it's
sure.
It's the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
You know? And shocked me. I think it's literally once you see, like, divorce happen as a child and you're like, oh, that's always an option.
Yeah.
It's always an option, you know? And so you just kind of see that. And so I think it's up to you and it's up to, like, for me, it's like walking with the Lord where I'm like, okay, this is a generational sin. Sin doesn't have, like, this place in my life. This divorce does not have to be a story that's passed down onto me. And so for that reason, we're not going to let it happen, you know? Yeah. But it really does, like, go in generations, I feel like, until somebody, like, really puts a stop to it.
So that's where I'm getting with it is the question that comes to mind then is what do you do to stop? Like, I feel like everybody knows that divorce is an option.
Uh-huh.
Some might have it a little more prone to, like, it's a very valid option and it's likely to happen.
Right.
How do you stop it from happening, though? Or how do you shift that mindset of divorce is an option to it's not?
That's an awesome question. I'm going to give you my full, what I've thought of a lot of times. Because obviously this is something big on my heart. Because, like, I want my family tree to, like, be a tree, not like a orchard. Right now, you know? And so that's what I want to see happen. And so this is something that, like, honestly, like, this situation led me to the Lord. And so I've had to have like a very like Christian perspective of it.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I think it's a good perspective to have like, what's the word? Secularly too, you know, I don't even use that word right there. Did I use that right?
Yeah. Like a secular outlook. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like anything morally, you know, like I think it's a good perspective, but, a lot of times we associate love to the highest form of love and relationship that we know. So for, I'd say 99% of people in the U.S., they're looking at their parents' marriage and they're saying when they're looking for a potential partner, when they're looking for love or how you should love somebody, that's the most foundational form of love that we can tangibly see.
Yeah.
So you see like a really successful marriage between your parents, you're obviously going to be looking for that kind of love. You see your unconditional love for your parents for you or for not, you know, that's going to dictate how you go forward loving in the future.
Yep.
So I think whenever you attach yourself to that form of love in your mind that supersedes all the other forms of love in the world, that's like how you perceive it and how strong you think love can actually get. So if the max love that you see is your parents' divorce, I don't think you can really prevent it. So for me personally, I feel like looking at an unconditional love from the Lord as like the highest form of love and a love that we have access to, if that's the kind of love that, you know, you believe in, that's the kind of love that you believe is available to you, and you could, like, take some of that from him and, like, oops,
yeah,
then I think that you actually have that chance of stopping divorce. And I think, you know, if you just look at it and you just, like, kind of borrow that love, mm-hmm. that agape love that we kind of talk about, that, like, unconditional, everlasting, yeah. Then we get to see that. And, I mean, obviously, you know, it's, even if you're not a believer, if that's not your style, that's not what you want to chop it up with, honestly, looking at, like, believing in, like, a form of love that's pure, mm-hmm. I think is huge. And I think it all comes down to, like, what you believe in, how active you think it can actually be in your ribs.
Yeah.
Because it's all perspective.
Yeah, dude, that's an interesting and a deep one.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. I think that was said really well.
Thanks, dude. I feel like I just fumbled over all of that.
No, I thought it was
I actually just read that off of a Yelp review. So.
Nice. Yeah, so Urban Dictionary or something. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the biggest thing that I struggle with. One is having unconditional love in a marriage is something, I don't know if it's strange to me or if it's actually a thing.
Okay.
And then two, having that second person. So, yeah. Like, not everything is in your control. Like, you could be the best freaking husband in the world and do everything right and love a person perfectly.
Yeah.
And they could still wake up tomorrow and be like, I'm done.
For real.
So, it's one, it's potentially having, like, the other person on the same page.
Uh-huh.
But it's two, I think it's obviously picking is critical.
Yeah.
Which I am by no means an expert in that.
So. Just so you guys know, that wasn't a subtweet to anybody.
Yeah. I'm not adding anyone. But.
I mean, dude, I think you bring up valid points. I think that's the hardest thing to wrestle with, right? It's like, is this person going to be on the same page? And how unconditional can love really be? That's a good point. What do you think about it?
I think to some extent, there's not necessarily unconditional love with to some extent.
Okay.
When I think of unconditional love, I think of, like, your kids or dogs. Like, dogs are the first thing that come to mind. Where it's, like, a dog could literally do, like, pretty much anything. And, like, I'm going to love that dog.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, maybe there's certain things, maybe not.
Yeah.
But I think those are kind of more, I'm going to love them no matter what. Kids is probably the best example.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, no matter, your kid could do the dumbest thing in the world, and you're still going to love them.
For sure.
Like, no matter what.
So valid.
With relationships, like, or marriage, I guess, like, I'm obviously not an expert on it, but I feel like there is some line where it's not necessarily unconditional love anymore.
Mm.
For example, you're married and your wife cheats on you.
Right.
Five times, say.
Yeah.
Is it unconditional love? Should there be unconditional love? I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Personally, in my mind, I say no. I don't know what the answer is.
Dude, to sit here and say, like, yeah, there should be unconditional love, what are you talking about? Would just be ridiculous. You know,
that's, like, what I'm saying. Like, I think
it's hard to say that.
It's something to strive towards.
Yeah.
And something that would be good.
Right.
But is it actually, like, realistic or practical?
I think that depends on, like, what you define love as. Like,
yeah. What do you define it as?
What do you define it as?
Can I pull an Eminem line?
Dude, I would love that. Love is evil?
Yeah.
Backwards?
Yeah.
Oh, evil.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, outside of evil, I think a definition of love. I mean, I just think it's caring and respecting for a person in the utmost way is the first thing that comes to mind.
I mean, dude, I think it's a valid question. I mean, you look at, you know, justifiable, I think in...
Yeah, where's the line?
I mean, bro, I'm about to just butcher this, guys. I wish I knew my Bible better, but there is, you know, talks and, like, what are justifiable reasons for, you know, divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's taught about in the New Testament of Scripture. And obviously, you know, cheating and adultery is, like, one.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you can maintain the same type of unconditional love in, like, a different outlet. Like, I don't know how I'm describing this right now. I don't exactly know how to put this into words. But, like, let's say, like, the love during and then after the marriage look the same. But then again, I think it is up to you. Like, if you really do want to have this unconditional marital love, like, and that happens, and it's – because it's the kind of love that, like, the Lord wants us to have towards Him, right? Like, obviously, we're thinking about a marriage between us and the church, we're constantly breaking out of that marriage of like, or us and the Lord, we're constantly breaking out of that, like sinning, doing stuff. And so if we're like repentant and we come to the Lord and we have that, like, obviously he's forgiven us, then we can like enter back into that. And that's the kind of love that I want to create. And obviously we're human and it's difficult. And you've got to, like you said, marriage isn't just like what you do. It's like a two-way thing. It's 50-50.
Yep.
And so it's both of you guys buying into that, I think, is key. Obviously, it's like, how offendable are we willing to get?
I think one interesting thing that I thought about for a while, I want to say it was Grant Cardone, which I don't condone most things he says. But
you don't Cardone most things he says?
No, I really don't. But he was saying, he had like some reel or video or whatever, that he was essentially saying, you can prevent, say, your wife from cheating on you, because he was making a point of like, the only reason a wife would ever cheat on you is you're not fulfilling something that she either wants or needs. And okay. So he was like going into all this. This is very like this Cliff Notes version of the video.
Yeah.
But he was just making the point of like, if I'm provide for my family, if I make her happy, if I'm present, if like I do all these things, like there's no way basically that my wife would ever cheat on me, because she's not seeking out something else that she's lacking in the relationship. And at one point I was like, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But then I felt like the longer I live, there's some people that just either change or they're just not very good people. And they might have everything like that. They might have money. They might have a perfect relationship, good communication, like all of this stuff. And they get to a point where maybe they just take it all for granted and just screw it. This is fun in the moment. I might do this.
Yeah.
But a long-winded way of, I guess, just asking like your thoughts on that.
Well, I think at first glance, the Grant Cardone saying does sound really good, but I think in a way it kind of takes autonomy out of the woman in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just kind of assuming that you're going to do something and then the wife is going to respond this way. When I feel like that kind of looks at the wife in a way of not like her being her own person in some way.
It sounds very transactional.
Sounds very transactional. Yeah. And I don't think that's the way a relationship should be. But man, it's so funny going to, like, we've been to so many weddings this year. Everybody's getting married.
Yeah.
I mean, heck. Yeah. Shoot, you know, people are getting married right now. And
I think, is this like the most weddings I've ever had in a year or something? Or was that last year? It was like after COVID, because everybody canceled their weddings.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the most weddings I've ever had. And we've had a ton.
I don't know. Yeah, dude, our group chat is just one big family tree right now.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
We're just hanging on the ground by ourselves.
That's crazy. The amount of uncles one of those kids is going to have is going to be sweet. Shout out to all you guys that are getting married. I think that's incredible. And I love each one of you so much. And your marriages inspire us every day. I think y'all do it well. You know what I'm talking about. But anyways, I think I think it makes it a little bit transactional, but I think what we've been able to see through a lot of weddings is basically what every pastor says when they get married, right? Like, they draw this comparison that we see in scripture to Christ coming into the world and reuniting the church, us with himself, is always compared to the bride and groom. And we hear that every time we go to a wedding.
Yep.
And if that's like the comparison that the Lord's using, like his marriage to like his love for us and like how we should love him back, then I think that like his version of marriage does look like unconditional love, regardless of what somebody chooses to do. So I think like what we should look at for love should be the same way that, you know, and so obviously, you know, like you don't want to be in anything that physically tear you apart.
Yep,
but at the same time, it's like, how do we, like, I don't even know, man. Like, I'm not married. Yeah. I'm so far from that. Like, dude, I just, like, I don't know what, going forward, man, like, I don't know what's okay and what's not. I don't know what happens to marriages that, you know, last forever. I'd love to interview people and just kind of hear, like, what their worst stories are.
Yeah.
But, man, like, it's a whole different thing when you're in it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, who knows? I'm not perfect.
What are your thoughts on having, say, a marriage with an unconditional love with a couple, say, conditions? Basically, deal breakers.
Oh. Dude, I think if you have to, like, point out deal breakers, like, should y'all really tie a knot on it, you know?
I don't know. Like, I've always done, so maybe this is wrong. I don't know. I've always, though, put, like, up front, like, there's a couple conditions that it's over immediately.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what. Mm-hmm. And they're essentially cheating or hitting. Like,
oh, 100%. Both of those things? Absolutely not.
Like, it's completely over. But, yeah. So I feel like I believe in unconditional love outside of, say, those two or three things.
But, dude, I feel like those things are a byproduct of not having unconditional. So, like, I feel like those things are symptoms of a problem. You know what I'm saying? So, like, if you're foundationally, like, unconditionally loving each other, those things won't happen, you know? It's like you're not going to get a fever from eating a donut. I like, it's like, like, it's that was the worst thing ever. Edit that out.
That was good.
I just took a great point and just took a fat dump on it, man.
Yeah, that was good.
But, yeah, I think, like, those things are, like, symptoms of, like, a sickness, you know?
That's fair. So it's almost taking Grant Cardone's perspective that he had, but taking almost everything he said and making that one thing love, unconditional love.
Yeah.
Like, replacing anything. Like, you're not fulfilling and providing needs and helping out the family or providing for the family, etc. You're providing unconditional love, period.
Dude, and I think, you know, kind of – with my story and, like, the way that the men in our family tree have been is I don't think they obviously didn't love their wives unconditionally, you know?
Yeah.
And so the byproducts of that were, like, adultery, self-imposed, like, alcoholism, things like that.
Yep.
And, I've put my feet firm and said, I'm going to love my wife unconditionally, you know, whoever that may be. And there won't be any type of, like, cheating, hitting, stuff like that, because those deal breakers don't exist inside of a love that, like, you truly want.
Yep. That brings another, like, it makes me think of a big point of, like, continuously improving yourself as well.
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, if a plane goes down, it says to put your oxygen mask on first before anybody else.
Yeah.
Because if you die, then everybody else is screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of sharpening your sword in a sense as well. Like, I think that's what a lot of people in any relationship fall into.
Yeah.
Because they are so focused on the relationship in general that they kind of forget about themselves and start falling into those, like, alcohol, drugs, etc.
Dude, the moment you put your self-worth and your identity into something that's passing is the moment that, like, you're going to allow yourself to find it in other things, you know? So, like, if you're putting your identity in a relationship, go ahead and watch yourself, you know, watch your entire identity and your entire emotional state shift whenever the relationship makes a shift, you know? So it's all about, like, where's your cornerstone built, you know?
Interesting point there.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. That's cool. Well, I think we hit relationships fairly well.
Yeah, for sure, dude. You know, shout out relationships.
Heck yeah, dude. What else you got?
Man, you know?
Or we can wrap up. I don't know. What time you got to go?
Dude, I'm chilling. If you got plans, you got plans. But if not, I'm chilling, brother.
I hit a pig something.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
To that too.
I'm about to go to the driving range and hit three balls in the woods and say a cuss word and go home, probably. But yeah, dude, I mean, I think it's just kind of cool because, hell, what am I even saying? I guess, like, they're learning a lot about, like, putting your identity in relationships, being something that can shake you to your core has been really cool just to kind of become aware of in the past years.
Yep.
Putting my identity in jobs. You know, putting my identity in skateboarding, putting that in, like, friendships, things like that. And then whenever those things get shaken, watching my whole life just kind of become. I think whenever people are doing that and you see relationships end and you see alcoholism, you see things like that, you see fathers leaving the household, I think that creates communities of broken people.
Yeah.
And honestly, to just kind of, you know, tie the bow on the skateboarding thing here, like, you see a lot of that out of the skate park. I mean, I was looking at these statistics earlier, too, and this is just why, you know, I kind of wanted to talk about this today, because I think it's such an important issue that doesn't just apply when you're married. I think it applies, like, right now.
Yeah.
We were looking at statistics earlier about, like, the fatherlessness and, like, who it's affecting. We look at 57.6 of black children. So more than half of them are all growing up without a father in the household.
Yeah.
31% of Hispanic children, 20% of white children are.
Yeah.
So it's, like, so much bigger of an epidemic that I don't think we always get to have access to because it's not always in front of our face. So that's just, like, a reminder of how have not only, like you were saying earlier, social and economic issues created this epidemic, but also like how is it affecting communities and how is it affecting like everybody around us? Because I think we're seeing a lot of like stuff in the news right now being born, people with no dads in the household causing some real crappy problems in the world right now.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the, like we were talking earlier about the mass shootings.
Yeah.
And how basically every single one of them doesn't have a father in the house or did not grow up with a father in the house.
Exactly.
And it's
dude.
Like, there has to be some correlation to that of just not having a father figure. And usually it's because of, I would assume, that lack of attention that's given from like a masculine point, like you're starving for that basically.
Yeah.
And then I guess people go and they, it eventually builds to anger and a bunch of other things. And that's expressed in various different ways,
mm-hmm.
which is not obviously not good at all. But I feel like we could argue probably that the majority of the problems in America is because of not having fathers in the house.
I would 100% agree with you, man. I think it affects everybody equally. I think everybody deals with it differently. I think whenever you're a man, and you're trying to grow up and try to figure out what a man is, you kind of just let yourself roam free
mm-hmm.
into that. Whenever you're a female, you are also kind of looking to see like what kind of masculine presence does kind of dictate how you view men. And obviously yeah. anything can happen with that across the board. But when you try to figure out how to be your own man, you kind of just set yourself up for strength and not for strength. You set yourself up for like finding strength in things that might not necessarily be the case if you did have a household. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Which it's one of those, I mean, I feel like you could talk about and ramble on forever, but it's, I mean, how do you go about solving it? I mean, obviously it's okay, keep the father in the household,
right?
But I mean, there's so many things. I honestly don't even know where you like start to help that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you prevent a father from leaving a household? Which I feel like is a multi-generational like solution to the problem though.
Yeah.
It's not like you just flip a switch and oh, now all the guys are in the household. It's slowly but surely, and we're, in my estimation, going quickly in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Dude, I don't even know how you solve that problem. I think you have to choose it on an individual's perspective, right? Like yeah. you have to, as an individual, decide that that's not going to be yours. But how do you get that happen nationally? Man, I don't even know.
Which, so that's the biggest thing. And I think probably it could be the solution.
Yeah.
Is almost everything starts at your individual self. Like yeah. what's one thing you can control right now? Well, I can control who I get married to, who I have kids with,
yeah.
and then whether or not I stay in the household. Whether I stay in that kid's life, that is a choice that I can make.
Yeah.
So at a minimum, you can start with that. And then if you are a good, say, model of that, yeah. I think other people see that, and then it kind of expands from there. And if there's a
yeah.
group of people that start getting together and doing that, and everybody else sees it, and you're like, man, like, that's what I want in my life.
Yeah.
I think that's where, at least a starting point.
I mean, if you look at those statistics that we were talking about earlier, you know, you have 57% of Black and African-American children growing up in the household not having a father. You look at 31% Hispanic, 20% of white.
Yep.
And you obviously see that it's trending towards. Mm-hmm. I think there is stuff that we can do as a government that could take care of this. Because I was reading in the article, you know, not having access to contraceptives,
yeah.
does create more teenage pregnancies. And so yep. if you look at the rise of teenage pregnancies, you're going to see the rise of like fatherlessness at the same rate.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times you're having these children with somebody that you're not married to, somebody you don't want to have, you know, the rest of your life with. And then now, you know, the female is stuck with raising a child on their own, starting at 16 and 19 years old, sometimes earlier.
Yeah.
So you're seeing that. I think, you know, whenever higher income opportunities aren't available to communities like that, obviously father's going to try to go work, create something for himself. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense financially to try to support a family that you can't support,
yeah.
you know? And so then you're just constantly caught in this cycle of like socioeconomic things happening to people that just prevent them from being able to stay. And I do believe that like we could do something about it, but I have no idea what that looks like.
Yeah. You know? I wonder what percentage of the children without a father, I wonder what percentage of those are unplanned or outside of wedlock.
Man.
I would assume a large
You said portion. The percentage of unplanned children?
Or just, like, unplanned pregnancies, or just, like, out of marriage.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing, I hate to say this, but there's no, like, contract binding it together, basically. You know, like, a guy can easily just go sleep with a girl, have a kid, and say later. And there's nothing lost, nothing, it's just whatever.
Jeez, dude.
Which is brutal, but it's just a fact.
I mean, I just looked it up. And this was on the CDC, but what it's saying is back in 2000,
they're reliable.
They've got to be pretty reliable. 2008, women reported that more than half of all pregnancies, 51%, were unintended. And then 2011, it declined to 45. And apparently it's still around 45. It was still 45 in 2019. So apparently it's super down, you know? So like half of all pregnancies are unplanned. And, you know, I think like there's a lot of different ways people are looking to solve that. You have so many people, you know, talking about the A word right now, the hot topic, everybody's got an opinion on. But yeah, I think,
I'm not going down that slippery slope.
No, me neither.
I already did that and got reprimanded.
So yeah, we're not going to have that happen. But we could talk about things that we can do outside of that.
True.
And I genuinely believe, I firmly believe if we had access to contraceptives more readily available, we wouldn't really be necessarily having the A word debate as much as, you know?
That's fair.
So,
yeah, because if we didn't have basically 50% of those children that are born that are outside or just unplanned in general.
Yeah.
I mean, that's half the problem right there, really.
Yeah.
Solved.
For sure.
Quote, but then you make the argument of, well, then half those people wouldn't live.
That's true.
So,
I mean, now that whenever I have kids and they go to kindergarten, I'm going to be like, wow, half these kids are in an accident. That's awesome. And mine could be one of them. Who knows? You know?
Oh my god!
That kid over there looks super unintended. I'll say that.
Yeah, he's got my eyes.
He's got my eyes. Hey, I just understood what you said. Hope your kids, you know,
yeah,
you have great kids, darling.
That's what we need in this life is one more little hellion running around,
dude. We do need that ferociously.
That would, yeah.
I'd
could be.
Thanks, man. That would be good. Appreciate that. Let me know what I got to do.
Yeah, there'll be an application and a rigorous. All right, let's wrap up.
Let's do it.
Two closing questions. First one: what's the best thing you've bought on Amazon under $100, excluding what I said earlier that I won't repeat?
Okay, good. Totally. Best thing I've bought on Amazon under $100, dude. I haven't bought this yet, but Rafe and Alec Brown and I were in a bar called the Ship and Anchor last night. And our server had on a neck fan. So, and it would light up and change colors. Yeah.
The one that looks like headphones?
Yeah, it looks like headphones, but it just blows air in your face.
Dude, I saw those at the Braves game.
Yeah, she said
everybody had them on.
And they had like changing colors, $13.
Really?
I need to get one of those, man. Dude, you know how many times I wish I could just blow air on myself?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
I was going to make a joke, but I'm going to hold that one.
Yeah, me too. Stop. But anyways.
We're going to hold that.
I'm going to get some of those fans. I'm going to get 8 of them, and I'm going to be cool. I'm going to have a runny nose in the middle of summer as we're all dying from this heat.
Heck yeah, dude.
Shout out water. You know?
That's a great invention. It's great. Yeah, because I thought it was headphones, and I was like, I went up to this lady, and I was like, why do you have headphones for the game? She's like, it's a fan. And I was like, oh, shoot.
Yeah, okay. So much better than headphones.
Yeah. Smart. Yeah. Yeah. Or make both. We could make headphones that have fans.
Well, Dolly, it was fun. I had a great time not making millions prior to this conversation. Yeah. Going forward, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and now we're going to be rich. It's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome.
Second closing question, favorite rapper, go.
Oh, dude, thank you for asking this. Kanye freaking West, man. Kanye Omari West, formerly, that was the former name of him. His name is now Ye. I'm currently collecting all 10 vinyls on from his studio albums. Thinking about getting a little Kanye tattoo.
Man.
Dude, he's awesome. A guy that will say what he means, kind of like you. Feel like you and Kanye are the same person. You can like watch his life go full unfold through his music. Feel like you can watch your life unfold through your podcasts.
Yes, it's basically the exact same.
I mean, he's worth what, $6 billion, and you're 5.9. So I mean, you guys are right. $6. I say 5.9 billion. I mean, I love Kanye West.
You watched the documentary? I'm assuming
4 times. Yeah, I watched it 4 times.
It's freaking great.
Yeah, dude. You know how like you get in like a room of people that are just kind of narcs and they can all recite a Disney movie?
Yes.
I can recite that thing. You want me to do it right now?
Do you think he would be president?
Oh, dude, he's getting my vote. That's one of my biggest regrets in life was not voting for him in the 2020 election.
That would have been freaking, actually.
It would have been awesome, man.
Heck. Well, our computer just shut off, so.
Oh, awesome.
I guess that's our cue.
That's our cue, dude.
Wrap up.
Let's
time
do it.
Time to go eat some pig and drink some beer.
Dude, it is, man.
Let's freaking ride. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me,
great
darling.
Great conversation, dude.
Of course.
Freaking love it. Hey, always a blast.
Love it. Love you, man. All appreciate
right, brother.
You, brother.
Yep.